May it please the court?
Please.
Good morning, Your Honors. As my father introduced me, I'm Matt Meyercord. I'm here on behalf of the appellants. Before I get going with my arguments, I'd like to just give you the opportunity to ask any questions you have on your mind right off the bat. Would anybody like to ask a question before I start?
What would be your strongest argument?
I would say it would be that it's the right thing to do for Janice and Clyde Sides. I think I have strong legal arguments on my side, but in this case, Your Honor, what happened to Janice Sides doesn't happen, at least if the majority rule allowing expert testimony in a medical malpractice case premised on res ipsa loquitur is adopted. What happened to Janice Sides doesn't happen unless someone is negligent.
Don't you need expert testimony to establish that this infection is something that wouldn't, this E. coli infection is something that would not happen in the absence of negligence?
That's correct, Your Honor, which is what I'm here today asking you all to do, is to overrule the 1962 Supreme Court case of Hassemeyer versus Smith and adopt the majority rule allowing medical malpractice cases premised on res ipsa loquitur to proceed when expert testimony is required.
You never even got to that point. There's a summary judgment. You never got to the point where you could submit your expert testimony.
That's correct, Your Honor. What Judge O'Brien did was looked at this case and said, this is not a case that's within the common knowledge of laypersons. So based on that, he decided to grant dismissal in this case.
What would we even have to overrule Hassemeyer to rule in your favor? Because that case dealt with whether you need an expert or not. It didn't deal with whether an expert could testify in a res ipsa case, though later cases have so interpreted it. But it simply said that you need an expert. We can't submit a res ipsa case to something that's not within the common knowledge.
That's right, Your Honor, and that's what we're asking to do. We have a case that is what we believe is a res ipsa case, and that's what happened to the to my client doesn't happen without negligence. But we need expert testimony in order.
But that was the Tennessee case. When Tennessee shifted, they took that analysis directly in point. Say, well, you have the expert to testify, and they have their experts, and the jury decided.
That's correct. Which is so as it stands right now in Missouri, if the injury bespeaking negligence is not obvious to a layperson, you can't take that case to a jury. The judge.
And you're not disagreeing with that. You agree you need to have an expert.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Opposing counsel says Section 538.225 requires you to have an expert testify to specific negligence, not simply to res ipsa, that negligence must have occurred.
Well, I disagree with that. I think that the healthcare affidavit statute you're referring to, as interpreted by, I believe, the Budding case, only states that negligence must be proved, not direct evidence of negligence. And as we all know, that res ipsa loquitur is an element, or it falls within the auspices of negligence.
So your expert, in other words, would have said the defendant was negligent, even if he couldn't specify the particular kind of negligence.
He would say exactly what it is, exactly what res ipsa loquitur is, that what happened to Janice Sides doesn't happen unless someone is negligent, unless someone and those in control are negligent.
How if we were to follow your proposed rule, how would that fit with how the law is generally in the states on this issue? Do most states permit an expert to testify in a res ipsa loquitur case?
They do, Your Honor. It is, in fact, a majority rule amongst the states. Now,
very few states have a statute. Very few states, if any, have a statute like ours.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. But my, based on the Budding decision, that negligence must be proved and not what the respondents allege, that direct evidence of negligence must be proved.
We didn't address that issue, did we?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That issue was not addressed in Budding.
Correct, but what they're doing is interpreting Budding as saying that's what the case holds, and I don't believe that's true. I think Missouri, there's been a number of cases of the respondent site that have been handed down that are race ipsa cases, that are medical malpractice cases. So there is a whole realm of cases that ever since this healthcare affidavit statute has been enacted that have been brought under race ipsa loquitur. And nothing has, to this day, that issue has never arisen. And I think that's indicative of the fact that having a race ipsa case, whether it's requiring expert testimony or not, does not fly in the face of the healthcare affidavit statute. I would argue it actually makes sense that if you have to have an expert to even file a case, well, you should be allowed to be able to use that expert whether you have a race ipsa case or negligence case at trial. It's just a common sense argument that, at least common sense to me, that's what you should be allowed to do.
Well, the whole idea behind race ipsa, though, is that we're dealing with something that's within the common knowledge of laypersons. So really you're asking us to redefine the whole definition of race ipsa in med-mal cases.
Well, Your Honor, our position is that the majority rule allowing race ipsa cases that need expert testimony, that doesn't fly in the face of the common knowledge requirement.
Yeah, but
it's not diametrically.
Keep going back to the majority rule, but there is no majority rule given the specific statute that we have here that no other state has, apparently.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor, and I'll change what I say. The rule allowing expert rule allowing cases, medical malpractice case premised on race ipsa loquitur to proceed when expert testimony is required, we believe, does not fly in the face of the common knowledge requirement, because what the purpose of the expert is to serve, and this is what the Sievers and the Connors case refer to as bridging the gap, is they educate the jurors so their common knowledge is raised.
Well,
by
what's left though after the expert witness comes in and says everything that the jury was supposed to know.
Right, and then that would be up to the jury to decide whether or not, based on what they've learned from the expert in the case, whether or not the injury bespeaks negligence.
We have had this law in Missouri. This has been good case law for 46 years. Why should we not respect stare decisis?
Well, because more and more cases, even in the typical unusual injury cases and the foreign object cases, It's becoming more and more less obvious to a layperson that injury bespeaks negligence. Let me give you an example, Your Honor. A foreign injury case, and this I believe is actually the States versus Lourdes Hospital case from New York. It's a foreign unusual injury case. A lady goes in to have her ovarian cyst removed and suffers an injury to her right arm, which seem on its face is a pretty obvious unusual injury case. Well, what if during under anesthesia, the IV needle comes out and it's put in the wrong way? Or what if too much IV fluid is administered during anesthesia? Well, those intricacies and those reasons aren't within the common knowledge of a layperson. So even in an unusual injury case, it's becoming less and less common that the injury bespeaks negligence to a layperson.
I don't understand why you can't take the facts on this case and go find an expert who would say that, who would testify as to the specific negligence of the parties, the defendant here.
Well, that's because that's a good question, Your Honor, and that's because there are there's a number of reasons. One, we don't have any direct proof of negligence. We don't. There's two defendants.
Well, then maybe there shouldn't be a cause of action.
Well, I would disagree with that, because our expert would say that this injury doesn't happen to Janice Sides unless there's negligence.
Would you explain the circumstances of the injury as much as it is known at this time?
Certainly. Janice Sides goes in to have a back fusion and comes out of general anesthesia and a little time later finds out she has E. coli. The E. coli, our expert will testify, originated deep in her surgical wound site. So he will testify that the E. coli could not have come from anywhere else except from someone or something in the emergency room, and that those in the emergency room had co-exclusive control of all the instrumentalities.
So the knowledge of what specific negligence may have caused it is more within the knowledge of the defendants than the plaintiffs.
Certainly. It's not obvious to a layperson in our case that you come out of surgery with E. coli, that injury bespeaks negligence, because, well, we don't know exactly who it came from. We would need an expert to testify just to those things that I just mentioned.
You sued several defendants. if you're going under res ipsa and not specific negligence, how does the defendants defend against something like that, where you're really saying, well, we don't know who did it or how it happened, but we're going to sue the three of you?
Right, and the whole idea behind res ipsa loquitur is that it's an inference of negligence, and then it's more fair to not punish the person who didn't do anything wrong, in our case, Janicides, and let the people who have greater knowledge as to what happened during the procedure, let them figure out what happened. Give us the inference, because the injury doesn't happen without negligence. We're Janicides.
Well, I can understand the kinds of res ipsa cases where you leave a foreign object in a surgical wound, because it was the surgeon. It has to be. But in a situation like this, where you just sort of shotgun several different defendants, how is it equitable to, how are they going to divide up the liability if you can't establish which one caused it?
Well, they have greater knowledge as to what transpired during the procedure. And they who knows, they might, if we're allowed to proceed with the case, they might find out what happened through investigation. But we don't have that ability. Janicides was knocked out cold during her surgery. She doesn't know who stuck their fingers down into her surgical site. And the premise behind res ipsa is that you don't punish that person because they can't identify exactly who it is.
Well, wouldn't you, in res ipsa, do you have to prove control, or are you alleging, I don't know if they still teach you Barra versus Vanguard in law school as they used to, but it's a common negligence doctrine in surgical situations, the very situation.
Certainly.
In which it arose. Are you depending on that, or?
There's a case, the name is escaping me, I have it in my brief, that says that if we can establish co-exclusive control, then that arm of res ipsa is satisfied. In other words, you can have multiple defendants, but as long as they have co-exclusive control of the instrumentalities causing negligence. And I see my time is up. Would you like me to finish the answer, Your Honor?
I think we understand where you're going with
okay.
that. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, my name is Scott Williams. I'm going to be spending time with Mr. Carmody, who's going to speak principally to the public policy issues and answer any other questions that the Court may have. I want to discuss, I guess, two principal things. Number one, I don't believe that this is an appropriate case, an appropriate vehicle for deciding the issue that's before the Court because of the lack of exclusivity, as you've already noted, and because of the lack of the kind of disease it is, a bacterium that commonly occurs in the environment, and then the multiple defendants as well.
But what happened below, the trial court said they could not have an expert on res ipsa, and therefore they had no expert. So that is the issue that's presented on appeal.
That is the sole issue. The sole point on appeal is whether or not, raised by the appellant, is whether or not this court should adopt what they call the majority rule, which in fact is a 23-state rule in which we reviewed all those cases. We couldn't find a single one.
Don't all but six states let you use an expert in res ipsa cases?
Pardon me?
Didn't Missouri, one of just six states, that does not let you use an expert in res ipsa?
I don't know that all 50 states have addressed the question. There were 23 states that we found that do permit that. Well, 23 to 6, but the point is Missouri has a unique statutory scheme by which the people of Missouri adopted.
But those, and I noticed that those are two very separate issues. One is you're talking about the statute, but separate from the statute, we can address its language and kind of flipping back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Can you use an expert in res ipsa? Our Hosmeyer case, which was the seminal case in Missouri, did not say you could not. It says you have to have an expert.
Right.
And that case was either res ipsa, they said I don't have to have an expert because it speaks for itself, and we said no, you have to have an expert in a medical negligence case.
Right.
Later cases have applied it as if it dealt with you're not allowed to have an expert
right.
in a res ipsa case, but that was not the issue in that case. Mm-hmm. And after we decided that case, the restatement came out that recommended, that said expert testimony that an event does not usually occur without negligence can be a sufficient basis in res ipsa, and other cases have then in other states permitted use of experts in res ipsa, as I understand, in reliance on the restatement. This may be the policy issue your co-counsel is going to address, but I'd like you to address more the policy issue of why not allow, given what the restatement has said since the Hosmeyer case, what are the pro and con policy reasons why we should or should not allow you to bring in an expert in a res ipsa case as opposed to more semantic.
Yeah, and I will defer that principally to Mr. Carmody, since he's going to address that. But I don't think you can divorce that question from the express will of the people in Chapter 538.225. In Missouri, I think they're related. In a situation where the people of Missouri have been restricting the applicability of medical malpractice.
So then if you could go over the statute and tell me what language you rely on in the statute that you say would, whatever that we otherwise might want to do under the statute, it's simply not appropriate.
Sure. Section 538.225 obviously has a mandatory requirement for an affidavit. This court in the Budding case, although it was a strict liability case, said that it would be an absurd result to conclude that you have to have an affidavit, but you don't have to have an expert to testify to basically what that affidavit says when you get to court. And so the requirement is, in a malpractice case, that you have an expert testify to the standards expressed basically in the affidavit requirement. That the defendant, as opposed to some individual who was in the area or some defendant, failed to use such care as a reasonably prudent provider would have under similar circumstances.
Let me ask you this, because you're looking at the statute that requires an affidavit, and I assume that the fact that we are talking about, and when the judge said you cannot have an expert because you've got a res ipsa case, the fact that the finder of fact would need to determine is that this is a something that does not happen in the absence of negligence. That's the fact we're asking a fact finder to determine, aren't we?
I believe that's the question that should be asked. The Missouri cases have been a little bit mixed in the language that's used in that regard. I call that a probability standard.
But that's
yes.
A fairly precise statement of what the fact that needs to be found.
That's exactly right, and I think what the plaintiffs are proposing is to bring an expert. I'm sorry.
But I'm looking at another statute, the expert witness statute, and it says in any civil action, if scientific, technical, or other specialized knowledge will assist the trier of fact to understand the evidence or to determine a fact in issue, a witness qualified as an expert by knowledge, skill, experience, training, or education may testify thereto in the form of an opinion or otherwise.
Right.
Doesn't that take care of it?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
But I mean, here's the thing. The judge said you cannot use an expert.
Right.
But we have a statute that says that an expert may testify if it will assist the finder of fact.
Right. I think what the judge really said is you cannot use an expert in a res ipsa case where it has to lie within the common knowledge of the layperson, except for those two rare exceptions that we talked about. And that expert statute that you just read from has to be read, I think, in conjunction with 538, which says the expert in the medical malpractice case must speak to what would a similar expert do under the same or similar circumstances.
But that's what they offered here, wasn't it?
No.
They offered someone who said, you know, when you're a surgeon and you're conducting surgery, if you're not negligent, the person doesn't come out with an infection.
No, they're not. They're not speaking to the circumstances. What they're saying is we can't tell you what the specific circumstances were that caused this infection. It's
Well, but no, but if they're expert, I presume they wouldn't have gotten past the first 90 days if they didn't have an affidavit that said a reasonably prudent and careful health care provider, they failed to use such care as a reasonably prudent and careful health care provider would have under similar circumstances, and such failure to use reasonable care directly caused or contributed to cause the damages. I mean, that's what the statute says. It doesn't say you've got to testify to the specific act of negligence and you can't use res ipsa. I understand you want us to read it in there, but I'm not clear.
But, Your Honor,
where you get it from.
Your Honor, I think it is in there when it says you've got to speak to the circumstances at bar, the similar circumstances. The circumstances in this case, and in fact it was pled specifically in an earlier case, the circumstances under which that infection could have occurred. A nicked bowel, they pled earlier. They pled failure to use proper sterilization techniques in the room and so forth. But similar circumstances begs the question of those circumstances being defined. That's a specific negligence case, and that's okay. They didn't sterilize the instruments, and they've got an affidavit that says that there was a failure to do that or something similar to that.
Aren't you saying there's multiple possible causes all within the control of the defendant that could have been it? by giving me three examples there?
I mean, not exclusively within the control of the defendant, because you can get E. coli from lettuce, from spinach, as you know. You can get it from a nicked bowel, which is one of the things that they pled. They could have got it before they came to the hospital.
We've got a room full of it right here.
Pardon me?
And we've got a room full of it right here.
Exactly. Right here in our nostrils. We
have lettuce or spinach as the site of the surgical, of the surgery.
I'm sorry.
How do you leave the lettuce and spinach at the site of the surgery?
They weren't, but, Your Honor, there's a 1 to 9 day exposure period of time. This person was home for 3 days before she came back to the hospital, and it wasn't diagnosed until 2 days after that.
I understand what you're saying is that they maybe did not prove, or there's a question of fact as to whether they proved that it, in fact, was something that would not occur in the absence of negligence. But why isn't that an issue for competing experts as opposed to saying you just can't submit it?
Your Honor, I think basically whether you're going to bring an expert in to say that some defendant in some way, at some time, at some place, was in some way negligent, that effectively changes the burden of proof for all practical purposes, you know. And they've got discovery to find out the specific circumstances that occurred in that operating room. So I think our current rule is sufficient.
Thank you.
Defer to my co-counsel.
Your Honors, if it pleases the Court, I'm Don Carmody, counsel for defendant and respondent Dr. Lee and Tesson Ferry. Allow me just to begin by saying that it's always been my understanding that the court system was set up so that if a claim was brought against you for damages, that you would be told of the negligence and you would have a right to defend yourself on that negligence and have a jury take care of that. Now, there's an exception.
Yeah, when your plaintiff is anesthesia, is under anesthesia, it's hard for that plaintiff unless they have a camera on everyone in the surgery. Maybe there are cameras to know. I mean, this is a particular instance where the plaintiff can't really see who's doing what.
And
but
judge,
under anesthesia.
And judge, that's correct. And there is a very small exception to what I just said, and that is res ipsa loquitur.
And your arguments seem to go that you think there should not be res ipsa as opposed to that there should not be the requirement for the expert.
Right.
Isn't it a general policy argument that you disagree with the doctrine in total?
No. We absolutely agree with the doctrine. The doctrine is based upon common knowledge, most importantly common knowledge, and then also control. We agree with those things. The problem is what the appellant is trying to do is replace the common knowledge with expert testimony. And in truth and fact, if you...
As I read your briefs, I thought that you were arguing by virtue of this statute there was no race. There wasn't race in bed mouth cases.
No, Judge, we did not intend to do that. Our theory is that we believe that the statute is a policy determination by the state of Missouri. And that is one of the limiting factors, and that would be in the policy issue. But what's really working here is whether or not, and what's before this court, should the common knowledge be discarded, and in lieu of that common knowledge, should there be expert testimony? Up to date, for Hazemeyer and Spears, common knowledge has been a critical component of res ipsa loquitur.
You would reject the restatement and the other 23 states that have said in a medical malpractice case, because you have to have experts, you can have an expert speak to whether or not the injury would have occurred in the absence of negligence by the physician, even if you can't specify exactly in what way that negligence
That is correct, Judge. That's
so
absolutely
you would say
correct.
They're just going
because
wrong.
As far as we are concerned, you've emasculated the integrity of res ipsa loquitur. It's no longer something, you know, if you look at the Hazemeyer case, Judge, the two exceptions that were given for the foreign object my point is, Judge, that's as plain as the nose on your face. We understand we can get that. But once you have
those are exceptions to needing an expert. But you're saying unless you're something
not
an
needing
expert,
an expert.
Right, right.
Yes.
Let me ask you this.
Sure, Judge.
We have it seems to me two doctrines in play here. One is the common knowledge doctrine. And the common knowledge doctrine is totally separate in my long ago legal education, because it says that where you would otherwise need an expert witness, if something is within the common knowledge of people generally, that is to say the jury, then you can go ahead and have somebody testify, even though it may be an opinion or whatever. And then we've also got res ipsa loquitur, which seems at its most to shift the burden of producing evidence. Because the premise is that the plaintiff, who has no participation in this other than being there, had something happen to her, and the defendants have the instrumentalities or the knowledge or the ability to get the knowledge, and so therefore it is required that they come forward with evidence about that. But the burden of proof of persuading that this is something that happened as a result of negligence is still on the plaintiff.
That's correct.
Right. So if that I'm is not correct. Missing anything, I think...
No, you're not missing anything. But Judge, one of the things we haven't spoken about and we haven't addressed yet that I want to make sure we understand is that you have a general summary statement from an expert hired by the plaintiff or hired by the defendant that's going to say that this act bespeaks negligence. If you're going to accept it, if you're going to expand res ipsa, the concern that we have, Judge, is that what really happens then is that if the court goes with that res ipsa case with that expert, you have an inference of negligence. So here we have in our case with our E. coli case, here's this surgeon, and nobody tells him exactly what the negligent act is. So he is required then to try to defend upon all the possibilities that may occur for E. coli and try to establish himself as not negligent there, all along knowing that at the end of the day, he has an inference of negligence against him, which you don't have.
Can you rebut that inference by showing or by expert testimony that said, look, there's E. coli everywhere. Mm-hmm. You can sterilize the hell out of everything, and you can still get E. coli infections.
That's correct.
So
you can do that. Absolutely, you can do that.
I'm
sorry, Judge.
I'm sorry. So under Hansmeier, the defendant can produce an expert witness even though the plaintiff can't?
Well, Judge, it's outside the scope of an expert witness because the court's saying you don't need an expert witness for these two things. Now, there's no reason to come in and say you can't rebut it. You can rebut it.
With an expert?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Okay. I got 17 seconds for my public policy argument.
Until you're over.
I got 20 seconds, Judge. Here.
No, it's going
up. Oh, no, you're right. I'm
thank you, Mr. Carmen.
Once it blinks, it means your time's up.
And thank you, Mr. Williams.
May it please the Court, Your Honor. Your Honors, I wanted to be a little more explicit about exactly what our expert's going to say. This is not some pull some theory out of thin air. Our expert is going to say that Janice Ives could not have contracted E. coli from anywhere else but the operating room during the operation. He'll say that it didn't come from Janice Ives. He'll say it didn't come from lettuce. He'll say it came from the operating room. And that you don't get E. coli during an operation unless someone is dirty or someone is negligent. That's what he's going to say. And I believe then that at that point that should shift the burden under res ipsa to the defense because let them decide.
But you still retain the burden of showing that there was negligence.
Correct, which is what our expert will say.
So if they could show, and like they said, 9 days, Mr. Williams said, in 9 days there may have been some other cause of E. coli outside of the surgical room, that would be something for the trier of fact.
And that certainly would be what the defense would likely do, is they would hire their expert to rebut our expert, who will say, no, there's other incubation periods or E. coli grows in other ways or it can come from somewhere else, and then it's up to the fact finder to decide.
And here's one of the problems that with the posture of an infection case is that you're going to have an expert say that this E. coli wouldn't be in the surgical site in the absence of negligence. And they're going to have experts that say, and your expert will probably be forced to concede to a certain extent the fact that E. coli is everywhere. And so the question is whether or not you can carry your burden to showing that this is something that would not happen in the absence of negligence. And that might at first be, a question for the judge as a matter of law, whether or not it is more probable, whether or not a finder of fact could find it more probably true than not true.
And that would be fine. Just give us the opportunity, Your Honors.
If we amend our res ipsa doctrine to allow this, why wouldn't most every med mal case be brought into res ipsa? Because it would be a lot easier to prove.
Well, I'll tell you why, Your Honor, because
instead of going out and finding a doctor who will testify to specific negligence.
Well, that's because if there's evidence of specific negligence, then that would be an issue for the judge to determine. It's just
you're not allowed to use res ipsa if there's evidence of specific negligence under our law.
That's correct. You can plead yourself out of res ipsa.
I understand, but it's a lot easier just to say that, well, this wouldn't have happened but for negligence of some sort that we don't understand the mechanism of.
Certainly, Your Honor. And there are other mechanisms in place to parse out those claims that they don't have any merit. And this is sort of, I think, I'm out of time, Your Honor. So.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.